You're listening to the Diplomats podcast on Asian geopolitics. I'm Ankit Panda, your host here in New York City, joined by Prashant Parameswaran as usual. Thanks for joining me, Prashant. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. It's good to have you on, as usual. So this year's Asian Summitry, courtesy of ASEAN, has just wrapped up in Vientiane, Laos. It's been a busy week, actually, since we also had the G20 earlier in Hangzhou, right. And North Korea decided to test some missiles. So, you know, it's a pretty busy week in the news. But I do want to focus on one of the headline-grabbing developments to come out of this whole week of diplomacy and summitry in Asia, which essentially centers on the U.S.-Philippines relationship, specifically Rodrigo Duterte's latest undiplomatic comments, which I think, shocked people, even though he has been known for some time for making quite outrageous remarks. He's insulted the Pope in the past. But earlier this week, Rodrigo Duterte, the president of the Philippines since the 30th of June, at a press conference, shocked the world by calling Obama, the president of the United States and the closest Philippines ally, a son of a bitch or a son of a whore. And there's a bit of a debate on the specific translation of what he said, and I'm not an expert on that, so can't speak to specifically what he said. But the point is that he used highly undiplomatic language to describe the leader of the Philippines' most important treaty ally. And the remarks really ended up having consequences. They led to the cancellation of a scheduled meeting between Obama and Duterte. The meeting would have been the first official meeting between the two leaders since Duterte came to power. And obviously, there's been a wide range of developments since then. Most importantly, we've seen the July 12th verdict on the South China Sea come out. And Duterte has been pursuing a degree of bilateralism with China, and there's some degree of confusion about what the Philippines is actually trying to do there. So obviously, there was, quite a few reasons that Obama and Duterte would have benefited from a conversation on that regard. But also, in general, it would have been a great opportunity to take this important bilateral relationship forward. Earlier this year, the two countries also activated their Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, which was signed in 2014. That was obviously done under Duterte's predecessor, Aquino, who was considerably more aware of the centrality of the United States for the Philippines' security in the region. Fortunately, the Laotians showed a good sense of humor and actually sat Obama next to Duterte that same evening for dinner, making that their first official encounter. So essentially, the two leaders exchanged some pleasantries. But really, Prashant, what I want to get at with this podcast is if Duterte keeps up his ways and, essentially performs for the domestic audience, where, don't get me wrong, his approval ratings are high. Apparently, in August, they stood at around 91%, according to one poll. I'm not sure how accurate the methodology of that poll is, but that's incredibly high. So that suggests that at least his rhetoric is working to an extent for the domestic audience. But if he keeps this up in the diplomatic milieu, I mean, where does the relationship with the United States go?
Yeah, I think the comments, as you mentioned earlier, first of all, to most of us who follow this closely, they weren't surprising. I mean, Duterte is well known for his, sort of tough-talking manner. He's insulted the Pope, as you mentioned, but also the U.S. ambassador as well, right. Calling him a similar term. And I think Duterte views he's got a sort of deeply held suspicion of the United States, which dates back to his time as mayor of Davao City, and he's an avowed socialist as well. And I think what he has said, I mean, if you look at the statement that was issued where he expressed regret following the remarks, it states there that despite the fact that regret was expressed, that the Philippines is trying to chart a more independent foreign policy for itself. And you can read that in various ways, but the major one is, as you pointed out, it does want to pursue a closer relationship with China, and it's a little bit more cautious in terms of how it approaches the United States. The more extended version of Duterte's rant actually goes into previous remarks that he's made about the U.S. colonial legacy in the Philippines and some of the other incidents where the United States has had a little bit more of a suspicious record in the country. Now, in terms of how it's going to affect the relationship, so Obama and Duterte actually had a short encounter. No one knows exactly how long because the spokespeople from both sides haven't really clarified, but there was a brief encounter in the holding room before they went to dinner where they exchanged pleasantries and had a brief conversation. And I think both sides have rushed to say that, Ben Rhodes, one of Obama's closest advisors, said that the relationship is rock solid. And the Philippine Foreign Secretary, Perfecto Yasay, has said that he's glad that that meeting took place, however brief. Yasay is going to be in the United States next week for some discussions on the U.S.-Philippine alliance. We'll also be giving a speech at CSIS. So I think both sides find that it's in their interest to try to patch up things. For the United States, the Philippines is a very significant ally, not just in terms of If you look at the U.S.-Philippine relationship, just militarily speaking alone, the Philippines has a crucial role to play within the first island chain, which the United States sees as very crucial to its security as well as the security of the Asia Pacific. And the new defense pact that the United States and the Philippines reached, and the so-called EDCA you mentioned earlier, that's something which the United States wants to proceed on because it has severe regional implications as well. I think for the Philippines, Duterte is it's a bit of a steep learning curve for him. He was mayor of Davao City, but now he's on the national stage, and he's focused a lot on his domestic priorities, whether it's negotiating with the communists or his war on drugs. So I don't think that he really has sat down strategically and thought about how the United States can play a significant role within this and how he should approach the United States. I think it's still very early stages. We're still just over 2 months into his presidency. But I think the consultations that we'll see between the two sides following the next few months, but also with the new US administration that's coming into office in January, you'll see both sides trying to make efforts to at least reach selective engagement on key issues. How can the United States help the Philippines in its economic development or in some of its internal security challenges that Duterte is seeking to prioritize? But for the United States, how can it move forward on EDCA as well and continue to support the Philippines on key issues like the South China Sea, depending, of course, on what Duterte's eventual position is? Because keep in mind, the negotiations with China are still very much early
Right.
days.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think what you offered is actually I think of a charitable read that makes sense at this point because you're right that things are very early on and it might be a very steep learning curve for Duterte. And I'm glad you also brought up his, his background. And particularly, I mean, the core issue that we haven't mentioned here, the reason for this acrimony is, US criticism of extrajudicial killings in the Philippines, which is something that, began well, not began, but when Duterte was mayor of Davao City, I mean, that was essentially what he became known for. And a lot of his popularity essentially stemmed from his perception as a strong man who was willing to go to ends that other leaders in the Philippines weren't in the war on drugs and even terrorism. I mean, he made some particularly gruesome remarks about Abu Sayyaf. I mean, threatening to eat them alive, literally with salt and vinegar. I mean, it's part of his image, and I think it plays well domestically, as we see with the approval rating. So, but I mean, it really does speak to the fact that, going back to what I've said on a few episodes ago, I think when we're talking about the South China Sea, is that I think this year, I mean, until April, really, nobody was really considering the possibility that Aquino could be succeeded by someone like Duterte in the Philippines. I mean, it became clear in April that this guy's approval ratings were high. I mean, he was polling very well, and then in May, I mean, when he triumphed at the elections, obviously, I think a lot of people began reevaluating how the Philippines would manage not only the alliance with the United States, but also how it's functioning in the disputes in the South China Sea. The bilateralism with China is something we've talked about recently as well. But Prashant, I also want to ask you. I mean, I think we read recent reports that Duterte had actually dismissed a lot of Aquino appointees, within the foreign ministry and elsewhere. And like we've said several times on this podcast, a lot of what keeps diplomacy going across governments and across administrations and countries is having that bureaucratic ballast that provides a degree of continuity. How do you expect, the shakeups that's been going on inside the Philippines bureaucracy to really affect this relationship with the United States going forward?
Yeah, I think that's a critical question because when you look at Duterte, he himself doesn't have a lot of foreign policy experience. So the key will be to see who is advising him, as well as the feedback that he gets from various bureaucracies. That's going to matter significantly. But we still don't know how these appointments and bureaucracy is going to be dealt with. I mean, even his current foreign secretary, Perfecto Yasay, is only a short-term appointment. So we don't even know who the Philippine Foreign Secretary is going to be further out. And there's a variety of views within his cabinet. Keep in mind, he gave a certain number of posts to some communists as well, and that could affect things in terms of how he deals with some of the economic policy issues that he has moving forward. So we don't really know how Duterte is going to deal with these various bureaucracies. I mean, what we do know is that he himself personally has an affinity for hiring and also trusting either people who are businessmen or people with strong military credentials. We don't know whether that's it might be a mix of both in terms of his own background and his focus on economic issues and the like, but also his realization that he does need the support of the military for some of the more, shall we say, controversial or very bold initiatives that he's undertaking. You know, whether it's negotiations with the communists, who are still very hated by the Philippine military, and I think some expect a rocky road ahead when Duterte is trying to do so much so quickly. And I think that's really one of the key concerns that people have. If you talk to people in Manila, it's the fact that he's moving on the war on drugs, is moving on the communists, is moving on the Muslim rebels, and he's now looking at sort of revisiting the Philippine relationship with China. The worry is that if Duterte tries to do too much too quickly, his political capital could dry up. That could then pave the way for his opponents to sort of try to combat him on some of these key issues. But also, if we have so much movement on so many issues, there is the tendency that there will be a sort of more chaotic sort of imbalance between the various bureaucracies and how Duterte deals with them. Because, like I said, you know, he's operated as a mayor in Davao City, but now he's on the national stage. So there's totally different calculations in terms of how he's dealing with this.
Right. And I guess looking forward, at the end of the summit in Laos, Duterte accepted the chairmanship for 2017 for ASEAN. So the Philippines is going to start playing a much larger role in setting the agenda for various ASEAN meetings and obviously next year's bout of summitry in Manila. What do you think, this, what do you think Duterte's leadership might have to, how do you think that might come to bear on ASEAN in the coming year?
Yeah, I mean, that's another I think critical question that people are looking to. You'll recall, you know, during the recent round of regional meetings in Laos, Duterte skipped several of the meetings, including
Right.
one on ASEAN and the UN, and he sent his foreign secretary, Perfecto Yasay, instead. And I think that plays into a fear that some already have about Duterte's skepticism about multilateralism. Now, it still remains to be seen what he's going to be doing. I mean, you'll recall a similar case happened with President Jokowi in Indonesia, in the sense that Jokowi started out with you know, sort of this a more domestic national sort of outlook, but eventually he came to appreciate that there is a selective role in terms of what foreign policy and regionalism can offer for Indonesia. And since then, Indonesia has not, you know, sort of changed its tune entirely on multilateralism, but it's engaged selectively on some issues where it's in Indonesia's national interest. And I think those of us who are a bit more optimistic about whether Duterte is going to change his mind would say, well, hopefully he'll have good advisors around him that will convince him that when the Philippines hosts ASEAN next year, there is a way for the Philippines and Duterte himself to use that opportunity to try to get some momentum for some of his domestic priorities. Now, obviously, it remains to be seen whether this is the case, and we're still early on in his presidency, but I think that will be the read. But again, the key issue, and I'd be interested to hear your insights about this, because we've both written a lot about this, but the big issue is the South China Sea, right? And
Right.
that depends a lot on how Duterte approaches China and how that goes, but also you know, how the United States factors into this, as well as other regional considerations. Because the Philippines, it's somewhat of an irony, because under Aquino and his foreign secretary Del Rosario, was one of the countries that was pushing very hard on the South China Sea,
Right.
to the point that some ASEAN countries were very uncomfortable with the line that the Philippines was pushing. And now Duterte is sort of taking a more low-key approach on the South China Sea. Now, if negotiations with the Chinese don't go so well, he might very well change his tack on the issue. But that'll definitely be an interesting point to watch.
No, I'm really glad you brought up the Jokowi example. It was actually something I was thinking about, the transition from SBY to Jokowi and how that affected Indonesia's foreign policy in the short term, at least, when he was first inaugurated in 2014. With Duterte, it may well be something similar, but I think something we need to keep in mind is also the external stimuli that China is providing here. And I think China has been very good in reading Duterte. And essentially, I mean, the overtures that we've seen after the July 12th ruling is, has in big part been enabled by the fact that China hasn't really pushed to change facts on the water in the South China Sea, which might force Duterte to, take some sort of drastic action, potentially driving the two countries towards conflict even. Both countries have managed their expectations, allowed, this experimental bilateralism to go on, which has allowed Duterte to essentially, not really say that much about the South China Sea. I mean, obviously, it wasn't a big feature of the summitry this weekend until Obama brought it up. But I think, you know, until China maybe changes its tune, I think, you know, we might not see Duterte really being pushed to change his tune. I mean, with Jokowi's case, I mean, you know, once the Natuna Islands issues started being pushed more by the Chinese, you saw Indonesia starting to take a more active role in the South China Sea dispute. And, you know, it may well be the same for the Philippines. I mean, Duterte, at least during the election campaign, you know, had quite a few things to say about Scarborough Shoal, for example. You know, he said that he'd jet ski out himself and plant the Philippines flag. So it's clear that, you know, he sees the nationalistic value of signaling strength on the South China Sea. And bilateralism, honestly, I mean, you know, if this does end up bearing fruit and Duterte does reach some sort of agreement with China on the South China Sea, it's possible that that could really hurt him at home, simply because Philippines public opinion, I mean, this is a really, it's a raw nerve. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, constituencies in the Philippines that want to see a resolution that really doesn't concede anything to China, especially when you have this international court verdict that has really laid out, you know, everything in the favor of the Philippines. So I think there'll be something to watch going forward. I think really, you know, we'll have to see how Philippines-China diplomacy develops. And I mean, really, it's a hard time to read where things are going with the U.S.-Philippines relationship, mostly for the reasons that we outlined earlier, but also because of the fact that, you know, Obama's about to lead office, and we have two very different successors in line. I mean, even though Hillary Clinton appears to be more likely, again, it's very hard to read where this relationship might go. All right, Prashant. We'll keep an eye on this relationship. Certainly, it's been an interesting year to talk about the Philippines with the presidential transition and developments in the South China Sea. So I'm sure Manila won't be dropping too far off our radars, especially with the ASEAN chairmanship incoming as well. Thanks for joining me.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, and for our listeners, thanks for keeping up with our podcast. And if you have good things to say or not so good things to say, either way, do leave us a review. We value your feedback, and make sure you do subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes. Thanks for listening.